Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
What's a confession that you can only post anonymously online? Story 1. I met someone on a dating app a couple of years ago, and we started a casual, sewell relationship. She lived a good drive away, and Uber was my main form of transportation at the time. So the first time we met, it cost $70, round trip, more or less, to see her. I was pretty horny, so I had no problem putting up the money. I went straight to her place. The vibes and compatibility were there. I had fun. But the next time she invited me over, I told her I can't afford to see her that often, so I asked if it was okay if we split the Uber fare, and she agreed. It was fun, but I still realized that it wasn't sustainable to keep seeing her, so the next time we spoke, I told her it wouldn't be a good idea to keep seeing each other. She heard my side and then quickly insisted on continuing to see each other casually, so much that she offered to pay the Uber fare for the third time we met. Now, respectfully, she was a bit insecure and was able to be vulnerable and open with me from the very start. So it was a perfect storm of attachment, in my opinion, and I think it's fair to say that she really liked me, hence why she insisted. So I agreed. I went to see her the third time, and I had fun again. I didn't want to ask her again for help with Uber, solely from a point of understanding it was too much for anyone to pay for something casual like that. So when she reached out again, I had already planned to cut things off, which was what I told her. But she went on to explain how she was a grown woman and that we could agree as adults that it's her decision, and how if she wants us to be able to keep having fun, she was willing to pay for the Uber. All that, but I knew it was because she liked me to be offering to pay for the Uber fare, in my opinion, and I was horny and having fun, so I agreed and decided to keep seeing her. I then said if we continued this way, we should be physically exclusive too, so we can have more freedom in S without worries of STDs. And she agreed. So now no condoms, and she was already on birth control. So I was hooked to the S. She would send me the money for Uber via Zelle, and I went to see her. We had fun. That was it for about a month, and that's a lot because we'd see each other about twice a week. That was like $500 more or less in Uber. I knew it wasn't right, but I was selfish and was having fun. Then started the darker stuff. A bit after a month of seeing her, I got a bonus at work. It was enough to complete the down payment for a car I was saving for. It was just something I planned on getting for a while, but it never came up in conversation with the girl. Let's call her Jane. We never talked outside of arranging meetups. So when I got the car, I thought about telling her something like, "Hey, I have a car now, so it'll be cheaper, easier to see you." But coincidentally, she did something I wasn't expecting. I randomly got a Zelle notification about a deposit of $250 from Jane. It was odd because she usually sent money per trip when I saw her. Right after the Zelle, I got her text basically saying, "Hey, I sent you money for Uber for the next 2 weeks." And this triggered something dark in me. I had a new car note, plus insurance, and she had no idea about the car. I had the opportunity to tell her then and there, but I didn't. I told myself I would keep it a secret, keep seeing her, pretending to still be using Uber. So I responded with something like, "Hey, you don't have to do that. Just send it how we've been doing." But it was just manipulation. I knew she would insist on sending money this way, and she did. As time passed, I got even worse in my ways. I planted manipulation here and there. Occasionally, I would do things like bring up the Uber app in front of her, ordering the ride so she could see it. But then I'd cancel it when she wasn't looking and pretend my Uber arrived. She lived several stories up in her condo apartment, so it was easy to park across the street, out of view, and say that's where my Uber pickup was. So she wouldn't see me from the window, or even if she walked me out, which she did occasionally. I made it even worse. I'm tall and not bad looking, and I wanted more experiences with women, so I eventually decided to get on dating apps again and started casually seeing other women. Protected, of course, because I didn't want to mess up my income from Jane. So there were times where I would go see someone, then later see Jane the same night. I would say things like, Can I shower when I get there? I'm stinky from the gym. All kinds of excuses. It happened a couple of times. On top of all that, I occasionally check the Uber fare rate from my place to hers to keep up with any changes in rates. It fluctuated up and down, and I would let her know I'd be needing more or less because the Uber fare changed, and Jane accommodated. I had to keep it realistic, right? It was all bad. Eventually, I met someone I fell in love with and wanted something serious with, and I broke things off with Jane. And this was when everything mostly came out. She shared how she put a lot of effort into our relationship to try and get me to reciprocate her effort. But I only ever leaned on the, I just wanted something casual. She was hurt, depressed, and burdened by our casual relationship after that because she developed strong feelings for me. We came to an understanding in that part, but I never told her about the car. I apologized for everything except for that because I was a coward to mention it. I took advantage of her, and I feel terrible about it. I'm not proud of it, so I'm letting it out anonymously. Story 2. I-20F have been sleeping with my brother's best friend, 23M, of 10-plus years. So let me start from the beginning. Let's call him Eric. I have known Eric since I was in elementary school. He has been my brother's friend since middle school and would always bring him around, but I never talked to him due to being a shy girl until about my sophomore year of high school. There was one random night that resulted in me frequently hanging out with my brother and Eric. Eric is an attractive guy. I always found him cute, but again, he was my brother's best friend, so I never saw him in any type of way. I also felt that I was out of his league, as he's older than me. Anyway, we all grew closer as a group, so we planned a vacation together to Puerto Rico. It was a group of us. My brother, his girlfriend Eric, his friend Eddie, myself, and my friend. Our Airbnb had two rooms and a living room with a small inflatable mattress and a couch. On the first day, Eric and I were the only ones drinking. We drank from when we landed until I knocked out on the floor. When I woke up, everyone was ready to go to bed. My brother and his girlfriend took one room, Eric took the other, Eddie took the couch, and my friend took the inflatable. When I woke up, Eric was offering his bed to me, asking if I wanted to sleep in the big bed in the second room since the inflatable was too small. I was still a little drunk and stumbled my way to his room. I didn't think much of his offer, but I also wasn't going to turn it down. When I laid on the bed, I was still wearing the clothes from that day in my bathing suit. When he walked in, he nudged me to fix myself since I was on the edge of the bed. But when he woke me up, I was suddenly not sleepy anymore. And he wasn't tired either, so we watched TV. Midway through watching, I joked about taking more shots, and to my surprise, he got up to get the bottle. There we were, taking shots and watching Friends. I was watching with my head on his shoulder until at some point, he pulled me closer, so my head was resting on his chest and he was caressing my arm. Again, I didn't think much of this. In my mind, it still wasn't even a thought of us doing anything, until at some point we were face to face, close to kissing, telling each other that we can't and it's just because we're drunk. But then that soon turned into, we can't tell anyone. We ended up kissing and hooking up that night, after we told each other that we could never tell anyone or speak on it again. We said when we woke up, everything would go back to normal. And so we went to sleep cuddling. Also, to keep things clear, things between us are strictly physical. The next morning, we didn't speak on it. Nothing was awkward. We acted how we always do, which I appreciated, until we were all smoking on the patio that night, and it was just us two out there. I don't remember how the subject got brought up, but we started talking about the night before. To sum up the conversation, it was basically us saying that one more time couldn't hurt, and what happened in Puerto Rico stays in Puerto Rico, because we weren't going to bring whatever we were doing back home. And so that same night, we slept together and hooked up again. This happened every day of our vacation. And no, we didn't get caught. If you're wondering what my brother thought of Eric and me sleeping together, he never really said anything to me. Apparently, Eric had asked for permission on the first night. Not permission to do anything with me, obviously, but permission as in if it was fine if I slept in the bed because there was nowhere else for me to go. And my brother was fine with it. I think my brother also thought we would never hook up. We never spoke about it because I didn't want to make it weird by bringing it up. But I know he also didn't tell my mom when she asked about the sleeping arrangements. I don't think anyone on the trip really suspected anything. Although I do know Eddie walked into our room one morning while we were cuddling, and he just stood there watching us for a while until he left. But he never said anything. Anyway, on the last day of our vacation, it was just us in the house as everyone else was out doing something. So we had our last hookup. We said we were going to cut off all the inside jokes that had come about from our hookups and anything that had to do with our secret. Throughout the trip, we would feel guilty for my brother and what we were doing behind his back. But at the same time, there was a rush of adrenaline and curiosity with the situation. I mean, come on, hooking up with my older brother's hot friend? It's straight out of a movie. I couldn't help but explore, and I think Eric felt the same way too. Yet when we got back home, it seemed like we weren't done exploring. The second night back, we ended up hooking up on my couch. And then we hooked up again, and again, and again. We've been sneaky with it, but also very risky. But that's the fun part of it, and he gets off on the sneakiness. Once we almost got caught by my dad, but no one is suspicious because it's Eric, my brother's best friend who's been around for ages. It's been about 3 months of us sneaking around. We've gotten to a point where I've snuck over to his in the middle of the night, or I let him know when I'm home alone, or we just hook up in my living room. For context, Eric is always over and stays very late, whether or not my brother is there. So it's very easy for us. Anyway, I've reached a point where I'm kind of over the rush of the plot. I know we're not going to date. He's made that clear because he wants a baddie. And I'm just not a baddie yet, you know? Like, I know I'm attractive, but I haven't reached my peak. Also, for the obvious reason of me being his best friend's little sister. So I've kind of made it a mission to work my way into becoming a baddie this summer, so he can want one he can't have. His old sneaky link also hit him up again, so I just don't even feel like messing around anymore before he starts messing with her again. Anyway, I want to be the one to end it, not him, because I don't want him to feel that power. I don't know how to explain it. He said I've been the best he's been with, which is why it's been hard for him to stop, but I feel like he sees himself as the prize, which I don't like. Anyway, I had my fun. Who knows when we'll end this fun? Probably soon. Just felt like saying something on here since I can't really tell many people. Am I a bad person for what I did to my brother? Should I stop hooking up with Eric? Story 3. I have OCD, so this is confusing. I don't know whether or not I actually said a prayer. This might be part of the whole issue. OCD sometimes focuses on taboo themes. I've had an obsession over praying for bad things. It started out with things like World War III, so I would die, and then a lot of other things like that, where there would be some benefit to me, but other people would get hurt. Unfortunately, it went beyond that. OCD has led me to become desensitized to certain things. Like if there was a tragedy that happened where someone died, I felt bad. But I was so focused on my own depression, I didn't really feel too much about it. Sometimes it could even be like, oh, here is something dramatic that happened that could distract me from what I'm worrying about. I felt guilty about that, but that is part of what OCD targets. This next part is disturbing. OCD causes me to look at stories of what bad people did, to compare them to myself and reassure myself I'm not as bad as them. In addition to that, sometimes dramatic stories of messed up things distract me from OCD. My OCD took advantage of this. With the prayer obsession I'm having, if I feel guilty about praying for something, it can make me compulsively want it. It's difficult to explain, but I could find myself praying for every little thing like, please let the soap be full, etc. I don't know if these were real prayers. My mind wanted to see how far it could go, and it brought in things like the ones I mentioned with dramatic stories. Unfortunately, that was a possibility too. My mind would do things like, for example, if a tragedy happened at school and there was a possibility of class being canceled. It would obviously be inappropriate to pray for class to be canceled because of it, but it almost caused a compulsive desire for that to happen because it was an inappropriate situation. I almost did it, but stopped myself. That's a much less extreme example. Today, the topic was about a school shooting. I've had inappropriate reactions to that in the past before, probably due to OCD blunting my emotions, like now I can read about it, or something similar as a compulsion. I wouldn't say I was glad it happened, because obviously I don't want people to get hurt. But my initial reaction wasn't really feeling bad. It was, I can use this as a compulsion, which brought relief because it fed the compulsion. I don't know that this is fully in my control. With the prayer obsession, the type of praying where, if I felt bad about it, I could end up praying for inappropriate things, could target moments like this. It was almost like a compulsion too. I thought quickly about why I'd want this. And in my head, I said, amen, sort of testing it out, but being open to the possibility I wanted it. I don't know whether I meant it or not. If I had to guess, I'd say probably not, but I can't tell. There is a good chance this is part of OCD. It's not normally the type of person I am. Story 4. I thought I would take this to the grave, but I feel the need to share some secondhand embarrassment. I work in a small building where everyone knows one another, and we are all collegial. I outrank everyone, but I don't make a big deal out of it, and everyone expects me to pitch in for parties, which is fair, and I don't mind. I'm no one's boss, I'm just really senior. This is relevant, I swear. I noticed some chicken meatballs in the freezer, a brand and type I normally buy, but I thought I had already eaten them. I asked a few of my coworkers, and they denied owning them, so I wrote it off as a senior moment and had some meatballs for lunch. The next day, I went to heat up some lunch and happily dumped some in my bowl. A coworker was in the room with me and asked for some. I said, of course. How many would you like? She replied, 5 is good. I said, they're a little sweet, so they might make your ramen taste odd. She replied, I know. They're mine. Oh, the shame. I wanted to disappear into the small greasy spot on my napkin left by the offending meatballs. I was the offending meatball. I brought her a whole new package of meatballs and a homemade lunch the next day. I will never eat those meatballs again. Story 5. Hi, I've been saving up for years now, and my parents aren't aware of it. I even opened the account through a different bank, so there's no trace of it whatsoever. Growing up, they weren't great with finances. Lots of debt, living paycheck to paycheck, and always stressing about bills. They're good people who worked hard, but we suffered a lot financially. I've been working since I was 16 and have always been super careful with money. After college, I landed a decent job in tech and have been pretty aggressive about saving. Nothing crazy, but I've managed to put away about $65,000 over the last few years between my emergency fund and investments. Here's the thing. My parents have no idea. They think I'm just getting by like most people my age. Whenever money comes up, I just change the subject or downplay how I'm doing. Part of me feels guilty for hiding this, especially since they sometimes mention how they worry about me financially. But the other part remembers how, whenever I had money growing up, they'd borrow it for bills or emergencies and rarely pay it back. Even in college, when I got a small scholarship check, they convinced me to use it for family expenses. I don't blame them because they were struggling, but I learned early that any money I had that was visible became family money. It was a very hard decision to make, but it turned out to be the better decision. Story 6. When I was 18, I got a job at a big-name supermarket. I took it very seriously, making sure I did everything right, didn't let anyone get away with stealing, and never showed up late. I was the perfect employee. But then COVID hit, and the only place that stayed open was the supermarket. We were in lockdown for nearly 2 years straight, so people were losing their jobs. Money was getting tight, and the prices of groceries skyrocketed. It was really bad. People would line up for hours before we opened, hoping to get something from our limited stock. When I finally opened the store, I noticed my elderly neighbor looking a little lost, so I called her over. She told me that her son couldn't visit anymore due to being immunosuppressed. She relied on him to bring her groceries, and it had been nearly a month since she had any. She was only there out of desperation. She has PTSD and can't be around lots of noise. But despite that, she came. By midday, our shelves were completely bare. People just snatched up whatever they could, leaving the disabled or elderly with nothing. I felt like crying. This poor lady had no food, no toiletries, and was panicked from the noise of people arguing and running around. I told her I'd see what I could do and let her go home. When I went on break, I walked into the back storage. I saw a shopping cart full of return-to-shelf stock, just items people returned for refunds, but still in good enough condition to resell. I saw a can of ravioli, wet wipes, and a carton of Long Life milk. Without thinking, I snuck them under my jacket and took them to my car. I drove to my neighbor's house after work and gave them to her. I didn't mention where I got them. I just hoped it would help. She thanked me and offered to pay me back, which I obviously declined. It became a thing for the entirety of lockdown. Anything that didn't have a place on the shelf, I'd take. I got pretty bold, eventually taking jugs of fresh milk or packs of meat. I never got caught. Once lockdown lifted, the chaos slowed down. Shelves were better stocked, but lots of people still had no jobs. I let so many people take items. Mothers would take baby formula. Elderly people took their supplements. Some couldn't afford everything they scanned, and I'd quietly slip the rest into their bags. It didn't seem fair that the supermarket raised prices faster than they could update their catalogs. I became known by some as a failsafe. Mostly mothers, a few students, and the elderly. Some even left letters addressed to me, thanking me for having a heart. I quit when the wrong crowd found out. A group of teens and young adults saw me working and started calling their friends to come. They walked the aisles, stuffing whatever they wanted into bags. They'd come to my register, hand me a single item to scan, smiling and joking. I wasn't laughing. They didn't even try to hide it. But I knew if I stopped them, they'd report me. So I stuck it out until I could find a better job. A few months later, one of the mothers I often helped told me she finally got a job as a manager at a disability support agency. She slid a note to me with her number and said, "You have no idea how much you've helped me. I won't get into details here, but if you ever need a job, call this number." She paid for her groceries in full, and I finally had a way out. I called that number, and thanks to her help and guidance, I'm now a successful business owner at 23. My elderly neighbor is now under my business's care. Her groceries are delivered at no extra cost by my employees, and her medication is delivered by me personally to this day. Story 7. I fully understand that what I did was wrong and that I never should have done it in the first place. Please don't hate on me. I don't think it'll add anything I don't already know. I'm 19 now, and I still regularly think about it. This all happened in an online chat platform. When I was younger, like 11 to 17, I had a serious addiction to adult content. It was so unhealthy, it genuinely affected my mental health. I was always thinking about it. It took over everything. At this point in my life, I didn't have any friends, and my parents didn't really pay attention to me. I was so starved for connection, I would do anything. I joined an inappropriate server, lied about my age, and told everyone I was 18. We started talking. He was much older. I don't really remember how old he was exactly, but it was somewhere around 36. I know. It's a lot. Insane. We exchanged all kinds of explicit messages and media. I never showed my face, but he did, all the time. He became obsessed with me. He even used some of the pictures I sent as his profile picture in computer wallpaper. He actually printed them out and would send videos doing things that, looking back, were very disturbing, even for me. At the time, I liked talking to him. We chatted daily for about 4 months. He was extremely kind and understanding, or at least that's how it felt to me. He told me how much he was attracted to younger people and talked about dynamics that I now realize were really concerning. I once asked him how he'd feel if I was underage, and he said he'd love me the same. Looking back now, that was deeply wrong. But eventually, the guilt built up so much, I had to tell him. I felt awful about the entire situation. So I told him the truth. He didn't seem to care much. He wasn't mad, which is probably even more concerning. He said he didn't want to talk anymore, which was absolutely the right choice. After that, I blocked him, deleted my account, and tried to move on. I know what I did was wrong, but I was a lonely, confused kid doing unhealthy things for attention. Story 8. I worked at a major donut chain in the U.S. when I was in high school, and I had a system where I pocketed a lot of extra money each night. I started this shortly after getting in trouble for giving away day-old donuts to a homeless shelter. They would come by in the morning and take bags and bags of donuts that we were no longer going to sell. One day, my boss ended that due to a corporate email and told me to stop. The people from the shelter came by, and I was forced to refuse them. So now we were just throwing away a ton of donuts every day. But there was no way of tracking how much we were throwing away. Could be 5 donuts or 5 racks. That lack of tracking was part of the reason my plan worked. Back then, a standard dozen cost approximately $6.85 or $11.50 for 2 dozen, and most people paid in cash. It was easy to do the math on the change since the majority of sales were 1 or 2 dozen. Also, the drive-thru camera and register were broken. For 2 years, so 90% of the time, I would open the register, make change, hand out donuts and change, and pocket the sale. Only if a customer asked for a receipt would I enter the transaction quickly. The till was never off because the transaction was never recorded, and we were never responsible for any discrepancy under $5. Mine was never off. There was no way to tell I was selling the donuts because we threw so many away and didn't track them. I'm sure sales figures slipped, but only a competent manager would have noticed, and mine wasn't. I probably took over $100 each night I worked and never got caught. I did this for about a year and a half until I left for college. Also, we stopped being 24 hours at one point. The third shift staff often left early and the store was a mess. For about a half hour after closing and in between cleaning, I would sit in the drive-through lane out back and sell dozens for $5, cash only. I'd make an extra $20 to $50 in that half hour pretty easily, and customers were always happy. A, they could still get donuts, and B, it was cheaper. When I quit, I took about 10 of the giant aluminum racks we used after cooking donuts. We didn't use all of them, and most were broken, but I didn't really ask for permission either. I brought them to a metal scrapyard. Shortly after quitting, I did feel kind of bad about everything and made a donation to the homeless shelter we had stopped supporting, but not nearly the amount I pocketed. I try to be a much better person now than I was then. Story 9. I'm not going to disclose the exact location of this event because I want to protect my privacy, and I don't know all the details. My family home is on a dead-end street in semi-rural Maine, and I grew up knowing that my neighbor down the street was sketchy. He drove an old car and had bullet holes in his front door. The rumor was that he had harmed his daughter, served jail time, and got out on probation. This all happened about a decade ago when I was a child. He recently passed away, and his house has been abandoned and put up for sale. I've always been fascinated by abandoned places, so I wanted to check it out. The house was a lovely colonial New England style, and I was curious. I went in one day with little concern from my family and no worries about being seen by neighbors. To cut to the chase, I found a room upstairs filled with children's toys, plushies, dollhouses, action figures, everything you could imagine. Most of it was filthy. Then in the attic, there was an elaborate toy train system. I felt disturbed and deeply uncomfortable as soon as I saw that room. When I got home, I did a deep dive into the address and the man who owned the house. I found out he had been arrested for multiple counts of harming children. I will never forget what I saw in that toy room. Knowing what that man did will forever make me sick. Story 10. I used to work for a company that illegally shipped alcohol to influencers, and I reported them once I was fired. My old company partnered with influencers to promote wine and beer. My role was to handle the logistics for these promotions, which included sending out bottles to influencers. However, we never had the proper license to ship alcohol in our state. Without this license, our shipments were not compliant with the law. I raised this concern with my boss several times, but she insisted we proceed with the shipments. She didn't want to pay the licensing fee or have to report how much wine we were sending each month, which was several cases, even though the law only allows for two per month. In general, she was a very difficult person to work with. She constantly belittled me and was looking for reasons to fire me. Eventually, she succeeded. A couple of months later, I decided to report the company to our state. According to local law, shipping alcohol without the proper license is a Class 1 misdemeanor, carrying a maximum penalty of up to 12 months in jail and a fine of up to $2,500 per offense. I stayed in touch with a few former co-workers, and they confirmed that authorities had launched an investigation. Unfortunately, we lost contact after I started a new job, so I don't know what happened next. I never told anyone it was me who reported them. I do feel a little guilty because, ultimately, the shipments weren't harming anyone, and I may have jeopardized the income of my former teammates and our influencer partners just to get back at my boss. Story 11. I feel very alone in the world, deprived of attention, and generally disliked by my peers. So I lie almost every day about little things, big things. I exaggerate details of events that happened or completely fabricate them. It's been going on for so long that the line of reality has become blurred. I don't know what's true or real anymore, and I find myself questioning thoughts, feelings, and actions regularly, whether they're mine or someone else's. I try to deflect blame and rationalize my thoughts and feelings through my perception of the world around me, only to again question the validity of my own conclusions. It's a never-ending cycle of confusion. For most of my life, I've lived untreated. I've been through the mental health system before, and it's part of the reason I have a lot of mistrust. I don't want someone telling me how to think or feel, because I've grown to believe I can only trust how I think or feel. Even if I can prove to myself that I'm wrong, I still feel like I'm not. I can identify when and where trauma has occurred in my life and how it has shaped my perception. I can recognize that because of the trauma, I am constantly in a state of survival. I can't stop surviving. I just want to live. Story 12. When I was like 22, I attended a conference at a hotel. My stay at the hotel was covered by my college, but I drove myself there. Well, the night I had to check out, there was this massive storm. I was terrified of driving home in it, but I was broke and couldn't afford to pay for a room on my own. I was trying to work something out at the front desk and started sobbing. A guy from my college, who I barely knew, saw me crying and said he was staying another night. He said I could stay with him, as long as I'd be comfortable sharing a bed. His room only had one. Of course, I was scared of sharing a bed with someone I barely knew. And I was dating a jealous and controlling partner at the time. He'd be furious if he found out. But I was so desperate, so I just went ahead and did it. Looking back, I'm so lucky that nothing happened. The guy was perfectly respectful. He never once tried to make a move or made me feel uncomfortable during the entire night. And my boyfriend at the time, thankfully my ex now, never found out about it. I've never shared this with anyone. And I still don't think I did anything wrong. I wasn't trying to cheat or lead anyone on. I was just desperate and needed somewhere safe to sleep. Story 13. Recently, I've noticed that I will cut people off without a second thought, despite feeling extremely lonely. I feel like I have no friends and my family doesn't understand me. I've isolated myself to a point where now I'm just on a worse mental decline. I think this all started with a medical issue. 3 years ago, I went through the worst physical pain I've ever experienced. It was a constant, horrible experience. It lasted for about 2 years before a solution was finally found. It was such an easy fix, which made it even more frustrating. It was a really low point for me. I couldn't work very well, and I was drinking pretty heavily to deal with the pain. Then, when a solution was finally found, the issue was basically fixed overnight. And after all that, I didn't know what to do. I was convinced I was going to die, not because of the condition itself, but because I wasn't sure how much more pain I could handle. I think I'm still mentally stuck. It's like I'm always anticipating that the pain will come back. I've slowly developed extreme trust issues, probably because I had to deal with so many doctors who didn't help, and the amount of money I spent that led nowhere. It's like every time I solve one problem, I create another mental barrier. I don't know what to do, because no one seems to get it. When I'm around others, I feel like I'm just putting on an act. I'm also losing a lot of sleep and some weight. I just don't know what to do. Story 14. I make $80,000 a year, and I've become so efficient at my job that I only put in about one real week of work every month. The rest of the time, I'm just watching TV shows, listening to podcasts, or diving into random rabbit holes online. When I first started, I was always behind. I didn't have a formal education in this field. I just picked everything up on the job. Over time, I got faster. I type around 75 words per minute with basically no errors. Then I started figuring out shortcuts. I realized I didn't need to use the bloated industry software we were told to rely on. I could do everything faster and more clearly with Excel. My reports are crystal clear, and if there's a mistake, it's easy to spot. No one complains. In fact, I'm the top performer at my company. I have the best relationships with clients, I meet all my deadlines, and my work is spotless. But the truth is, I only really work for about 1 week each month. The other 3 weeks, I just kind of exist. I used to read a ton too. 1 year, I read 200 books. I've done deep dives into every topic I care about. And now I'm just bored. I thought doing everything right would feel good. I'm overachieving and underworked, and somehow I feel worse than when I was struggling. Quiet quitting isn't even the right term. It's more like silent burnout. Story 15. I have had a pen pal for over 20 years. Pen pal is the easiest way to explain what our friendship is. We met online when we were in our early teens on a platform that no longer exists, back in a time when online safety wasn't as widely discussed as it is today. Over the years, we communicated through texting, messaging on various social media platforms, FaceTime, and more. Whenever one of us got into a serious relationship, the other would usually vanish, or ghost, as they call it now, and eventually resurface a couple of years later when the relationship had ended or was falling apart. Or sometimes life just got so busy that the physically distant friendship faded even more. For me, I kept the communication going, even while in relationships. Sometimes I'd disappear too, but then I'd have a dream or something would remind me of him, and I'd reach out again. He truly was, and still is, my best friend. However, I've always felt there was something more. There was always that wondering, what would it be like if we met in person? Would there be a spark? Fast forward 20 plus years and we finally met. He's handsome, charming, attentive, and incredibly kind. We got along so well, but he lives thousands of miles away. Now, I may be in the wrong here. I've been married for nearly 10 years and my pen pal is currently single. However, I'm also recently separated from my husband to give myself space to figure out what I need. Meeting him made me realize just how unhappy and emotionally hurt I've been in my current situation, but it also left me more confused. One of the things he said during our conversations was that when I got married, he made peace with it, even though it caught him off guard, and he didn't think we'd continue talking. But we have. That makes me feel like maybe these feelings were mutual over the years. I've always felt that he was the right person, but at the wrong time. And maybe it'll never be the right time in this life. I think he's content being single and not committing to anyone right now because he's gone through a lot of trauma and several difficult relationships. I'm not very old, 33F, and I know, hopefully, I have many more years ahead to live happily. But I'm curious what others might think, or if anyone has ever experienced something similar in their life. Story 16. I was pulling into my college parking lot and thought I could make it into the space, but I ended up scratching another car. Luckily, the guy was inside his vehicle, and we both got out. His car had a few scratches. I can't remember how large they were, but I don't think it was too bad. It was also on the back of his car and not very noticeable. I told him we could exchange information, but he told me it was okay, that things happen and not to worry about it. I looked at my own car, and near the front headlight, there was paint scratched off. It's a bit of a blur, and I can't fully remember how large the area was, but it was definitely noticeable. I'm currently in class and can't look at it again yet, but I haven't told anyone, except I told my partner that I hit the curb. But honestly, the damage is way too high up to just be from a curb. I know if my parents see it, they'll be mad, but I don't think I can tell them the truth. My father just looked at my car earlier today while checking the oil, so he'll definitely notice. Should I just not say anything until they bring it up, or should I stick to the curb story? I feel awful about the whole thing, and I'm not sure what to do. I'll look at the damage again once I'm out of class to see how bad it really is. If anyone has advice, I'd appreciate it. Story 17. A few days ago, I went through one of the most painful experiences of my life. We had planned a trip to my friend's farmhouse. There were around 7 of us, including my girl best friend. She wasn't just a friend. She was someone very close to me, one of the best people I've ever had in my life. Her mother had trusted me completely and sent her with me, saying, "I'm sending her on your responsibility." That trust meant everything. That night we planned to drink. The mistake we made was doing it without eating anything. I was drunk, but she was in much worse condition. She couldn't even open her eyes. I tried to stay by her side thinking, she's my best friend, like a sister, and to make sure she was okay, but I wasn't fully in control either. Then the mother of the friend who owned the farmhouse walked in. She saw the state we were in and panicked. She started slapping both of us, trying to snap us out of it. My friend wasn't responding, and things felt completely out of control. Her mother had been calling both of us, but we hadn't answered. We were in total chaos, and suddenly she was there. Her mother, her uncle, grandmother, and little brother all showed up. I don't remember exactly how or when. It's a blur, and I wasn't in a state to speak or explain. Her mother had trusted me, even as a single parent, knowing how much her past had been affected by alcohol. She put her faith in me, and I broke it. I can't forget that. Later, through a mutual friend, I learned that her mother told her never to speak to me again, that I should never be around her. And just like that, I lost someone who meant everything to me. She's still here, but no longer part of my life. And that's the kind of loss that doesn't heal. From that day, I haven't touched a single drop of alcohol. That night changed everything. The guilt of losing her, my best friend, someone who brought meaning and light into my life, will always stay with me. The memories hurt now, but they're all I have left. I don't know if I'll ever forgive myself, but I know I'll never forget what I lost that night. Story 18. As of recently, I've been struggling a lot financially. I've been trying my hardest to get back on my feet, but everything in life just seems to make it harder. I've been constantly looking for jobs, but not having a car makes it difficult since I have no easy way to commute for work. And to make it worse, I ended up losing my ID when I was on my bike one day, and no one wants to hire me without it. I've asked a few friends to help me out with money for food and rent, and luckily people have been helpful with that, but now I owe around $1,000 to each of them. I really don't want to keep asking for more help, and now I need to find a new place to live because I couldn't keep up with the payments. One night, I was extremely hungry and had no money at all. I had the idea to grab something small from the store and just walk out, hoping to at least get something to eat. It worked, and now I've been doing it more often. I've found small ways to get bits of food without paying. Every time I go out to do this, I get anxious because I know that one wrong move and it could all fall apart. But what else can I do? I'm hungry. Tonight, as I write this, I got caught for the first time. I don't really blame anyone for what happened. I was trying to take some candy, and it was obvious the employee knew. I gave up, put it back, and walked out. The employee followed me outside and yelled at me, telling me never to come back. Her feelings are valid. I just feel awful about all of this. It's not that I want to do this. It's just that I don't think I have any other option. Story 19. In my English class, there are three rude girls. They're friends, and they're the popular ones. There's also a guy who sits near them. He doesn't get along with them very well. Because of that, I had an idea. I decided to start writing silly notes and signing his name on them. I made the notes during my previous class so I wouldn't get caught writing them during English. When I got to English, I'd make sure nobody was looking and then place the note on one of the girls' desks. The first note she got, she showed her friends and then brought it to the teacher. She said, "What is this? It's from classmate's name?" The teacher responded, "I don't know, just throw it away." I kept doing it. I made four more notes, and each time she told him to stop making them. He kept insisting it wasn't him. Then on the fifth note, she said, "I'm telling the teacher." She showed the teacher the note and asked, "Can you tell him to stop?" But the teacher already knew it wasn't him. She recognized his handwriting. She said, "I can tell you, that's nowhere even close to his handwriting. Somebody wrote his name on it." There was some back and forth discussion about the situation. 10 minutes later, after things calmed down, the teacher addressed the whole class and said, "Whoever is writing the little notes, please stop making them. It's really getting to her, and it's starting to affect her." Story 20. This isn't that hard to admit, really. I've in many ways come to accept my weaknesses in my older age and allow myself some grace. That doesn't mean I'm totally okay with it. I'm dealing with about 85% Diogenes syndrome, a condition involving extreme clutter and neglect of self-care. Both of those are part of my reality right now. I've been on my own for 20 years. No family, lost friends for different reasons. My family is toxic, including a mother who seemed to dislike me from the very beginning. My siblings were never caring. I did my best, but my government benefits couldn't keep up with rising rent, gas prices, and car repairs. It overwhelmed me. I stopped caring about my place or myself. I don't need step-by-step cleaning advice. I need a team, but I can't afford one. I have the disorder to some degree, and it's real. I could be evicted if someone found out. The stress never leaves me. I've let my hygiene go too. I only shower before seeing my occasional friend with benefits, maybe a couple of times a month. He doesn't know about this personal struggle. What we have is separate from that. My place is a mess. I'm a mess. I can't afford therapy due to the co-pays, and there are no support groups near me. I'm okay, just incredibly lonely. I don't want to talk one-on-one with a stranger either. There's no clear floor. Bags of trash I haven't taken out. I'm ashamed. I'm afraid my landlord will see me dragging bags to the dumpster and start asking questions. I'm also sick with multiple chronic conditions, including fatigue. I'm often bedridden. I just needed to vent. Not looking for advice. I already know what needs to be done. But between my disorder and being completely overwhelmed, I feel like I'm out of options. Thanks for understanding and for reading. Take care. Story 21. I'm 32, grew up with split parents, spent most of my time with my mom. My dad remarried when I was around 6 or 7. We were never especially close, but that had nothing to do with his remarriage. My stepmom has always been great. Years later, they had a child, my half-brother, who's now 12, and I haven't seen him since he was a baby. There wasn't any falling out. Life just moved in different directions. Around the time he was born, I was entering my figuring things out phase, which lasted a few years before I moved out of state in 2018. Then came the pandemic. With that, plus some travel anxiety and my introverted nature, I just never made it back for a visit. Lately, I've been back in touch with my dad and stepmom more consistently, and now a reunion might finally be possible. I want that, but I'm also preparing myself for the awkwardness. It's not like I was off building schools abroad or living a wild adventure. I'm just a quiet guy in a long-term relationship. 9 years in private because I'm gay, with a dog and some niche hobbies. I do feel guilt. I missed out on being a brother. I wonder what kind of kid he is, what he's into, whether we'd get along, if we'd share any interests. Part of me even jokes that for all he knows, I might not even exist. Maybe he thinks I died or something. This is more of a reflection than a request for advice. But if anyone's reconnected with a much younger sibling after a long absence, I'd love to hear how it went. What helped? What would you do differently? Story 22. This was in high school. I had this friend I met in our third year. He was okay except for the times when he was extremely annoying. I sat in front of him, in the back row of the class. Sometimes he would randomly say, "Let's go," and hit the back of my head. I tolerated it at first because I didn't want to make a scene, and I thought he'd eventually stop. But he didn't. I told him to back off, and he would, for a few days or a week, but then he'd start again. We almost got into a fight over it. He also wasn't doing well academically. From what I remember, he failed or barely passed math, chemistry, and English. For some exams, I even let him cheat off my paper, for a fee. These were IB classes, too. Then came the biology final. It was supposed to be easier because the last one was tough. He was on the verge of failing, so he asked if he could copy my answers. I said, "Sure. This one's on me." But during the exam, I looked at the questions, figured out the correct answers, and deliberately marked the wrong ones on my sheet, except for a few easy ones, so it wouldn't seem suspicious. After he finished and dozed off, as I expected, I changed my answers to the correct ones. Later, he even told me he changed one of his answers because he thought I was wrong. That was one of the few I had left correct. He got it wrong. He failed. I didn't show up the day our exams were returned. When he asked me later how I did, I told him my score was terrible. He got something in the 30s or 20s. I got a 90-something. He was already in trouble with the school. After that biology result and his other failing grades, he ended up quitting IB and wasn't in our class anymore. Peace at last. And for those wondering why I didn't just switch seats, the class had a seating chart, and changing spots would have caused unnecessary drama and backlash. Story 23. I just turned 28 and I'm still a virgin. Never had a girlfriend or even kissed anyone. For the longest time, I thought I was a failure because of it. Since I was a teenager, it was the one thing I wanted most. Love, intimacy, affection. Every girl I ever liked didn't like me back. All the rejection wore me down. I tortured myself with it for years. I used to see it as the great tragedy of my life, but now for some reason, I just feel at peace. I'm completely calm about it. I feel nothing. I never wanted kids, so I never had to worry about accidental pregnancy or child support. I never got an STD. Sure, I may have missed out on some good experiences, but honestly, I love the life I have. I can travel whenever I want. I can switch jobs or pursue different paths without worrying about a partner or a family. I've had a kind of awakening. I'd still like to experience love at least once, just to know what it feels like. But it doesn't weigh me down anymore. I have complete freedom, no obligations, no responsibilities like a spouse or children. I just live. Story 24. I've made a post about this somewhere else, but deleted it out of shame. Over this last summer, my brother came into my room extremely drunk. We were just talking, but he got very emotional and came in to hug me. I was lying in my bed and he was hugging me, but he kept pulsating the hug, and every time he squeezed, my chest would press up against him. This went on for a while. It happened twice in the same setting. I have to say I was quite mortified, which I'm still unsure if I should be. Some days I really love my brother because he's funny and a good person to be around, but other days he's really scary and selfish, and I just feel afraid. I did not like what he did, and I went and told my mom. She told me it wasn't his intention and basically dismissed me, but it didn't change the way it made me feel. I cried over it a couple of times, but tried to convince myself that my brother wouldn't do something like that to me. I feel so lost and confused, and I'm scared to tell my therapist. I don't know why I feel like my emotions are wrong. Is it because I was told he didn't mean it? I wrote a letter to him about it and left it in his room. After that, he stopped drinking for a while, but he didn't say anything to me. Eventually, he started drinking again, and he grabbed my hand in a very aggressive way. It brought all those feelings back. I don't know what to do with all of this. It eats away at me whenever it comes back into my mind. Story 25. I had a terrible drinking problem from my teen years up until I was in my 30s. At one point, it stopped being fun. I was in a relationship with someone who asked me to quit, and the hangovers were getting unbearable, so I stopped. For over a decade, I was able to stay away from alcohol completely. Lately, though, I've been struggling mentally and emotionally. I started allowing myself one beer on the weekends. It felt manageable at first, but now I've been spiraling, really depressed and lonely. I started sneaking out after dinner, walking to the corner store, and drinking a beer outside on weeknights. On Sunday night, I drank enough that I felt it all day at work the next day. Last night, I drank my usual beer, but I wanted more. The store was closed, so I went to a hotel bar down the street. Since it was Cinco de Mayo, I ended up having margaritas and more beer. I got drunk. I rambled incoherently to the bartender before leaving, trying to be flirty, but mostly just embarrassing myself. I didn't get home until after midnight, and I'm usually in bed before 10 p.m. My alarm didn't wake me, and I had to rush to get ready with a five-minute wash-up. Now I'm at my desk, feeling completely useless and unproductive. Sometimes I really hate myself for this. Story 26. From the other side of nearly a year since we last saw each other, I wanted to tell you how truly sorry I am for my part in our breakup, especially for what I put you through before it ended, but also for the poor decisions I made afterward. Losing you was the hardest thing I've ever had to face in life. I still have a great deal of love for you and always will. I recognize now that we weren't good for each other anymore. I think about you often and the huge impact you've had on my life. My last email, where I asked you to treat me like I'm gone, was unnecessarily dramatic, but I needed some kind of relief. I wasn't eating or sleeping, and it was a desperate attempt to regain control over a very broken state of mind. The last time you came over and told me to give you some time, I found out you had stayed over at A's house that night. It sent me into a dark place where I made terrible choices for a while. Anyway, take care. Maybe I'll see you around. Story 27. 2 years ago, I had a little family, a job, a smile on my face, and never did I think I'd be where I am now. As I smoke my last bowl, I find myself contemplating why I even wake up, why I'm still here, why I don't just stop existing. That little family turned out to be a lie. The kids weren't mine, and the person I was with was consistently unfaithful, even while I was raising her first child like my own. I lost my job because I couldn't be there when I was needed. So many people in my family passed away suddenly, and I just couldn't keep up anymore. I lost myself. I lost everything. Debt piled up, and I had no money left to survive. Every cent I had went towards substances to numb the constant pain I felt. I got arrested, and I didn't even care. I might be in more trouble now, and I still don't care. I used to be happy. I used to be full of life. Now I look into the darkness, thinking about a life full of lies. All that's left is an empty soul, waiting for the last breath, quietly hoping it comes soon. Story 28. I used to work for a shady company that pretended to offer personal loans. I was broke when I took the job. I needed the money badly, and this company, based outside the U.S., promised good pay and a simple sales role. I didn't ask too many questions. I should have. From day one, it felt off. We were told to call people hundreds of times a day, telling them they were pre-approved for a loan. You could hear the hope in their voice. It was like someone had finally thrown them a lifeline. But it was all a lie. There was no loan. It was just a bait and switch into a debt resolution program. We convinced people we could negotiate with their creditors, lower their payments, and get them out of debt. But what we didn't say was that their credit would be wrecked. We told them to stop paying their bills so we could negotiate. That's when everything collapsed for them, like pulling the floor out from someone who was already drowning. I only worked there for a short time, but every night I went home feeling sick, like I was scamming people who trusted me because I sounded like someone who cared. I needed the money, but it felt like I was selling my soul one call at a time. My breaking point? An 85-year-old woman from Texas, sweetest voice you've ever heard. She thought she was getting a loan to fix her roof before winter. She was scared it might collapse. Something about her voice just stopped me. I told her the truth. I said, "Ma'am, I'm so sorry, but please don't pick up any more calls from this number. It's not what they say it is." Then I hung up, and I quit, right then and there. If your phone's blowing up with loan offers that sound too good to be true, trust your gut. It might be a trap. It might be someone like I used to be. Don't fall for it. I never wanted to hurt anyone, but I did, and I'll always carry that. Story 29. I honestly don't know how to begin this. I've lied to my parents about going to university for almost 2 years. When I tell them I'm going to class, I've actually just been sitting in my car, wasting gas and time. I've been stuck in front of my computer, battling a serious addiction to it. College felt like it was in the way. I've been struggling with depression and dark thoughts due to a lack of human connection and always feeling like a burden to my parents. My Hispanic parents have sacrificed so much for me, and instead of honoring their dream of seeing me graduate, I've been lying to them. Today, I finally ripped off the Band-Aid. Graduation was only a few days away, and I had no other choice. I told my dad since my mom was out of town, and he completely shut down when he found out I hadn't been attending college. I don't know how to make things right. For a long time, my plan was to join the military and just disappear, but I couldn't go through with it because I love my parents. I owe them everything. I'm still considering joining the Army as a way out, but I'm not even sure I'm Army material. I've never had clear direction academically and have always struggled in school. I'm scared of my future. I'm hoping others out there, especially parents or people who've been in similar situations, can give me some advice. I don't really use Reddit, but over the past few days, reading stories from others in similar shoes has been eye-opening. People always say, just rip the Band-Aid off and tell them. And honestly, it's true. Confessing lifted an enormous weight off my chest. I haven't been punished yet, and I'll share updates. But I can say this. My parents would rather have me confess than disappear or do something drastic. Once you take that first step, everything slowly starts to fall into place. It's hard. It's terrifying. But it's liberating. Story 30. Well, it all started like this. I'm a 20-year-old woman, and about a month ago, I was looking for a job. Specifically, something as a cashier. I had been searching for a while when I came across a post on Facebook offering the exact kind of job I wanted. I immediately messaged the profile. The job sounded great, decent pay, and what seemed like a good work environment. The first step was an internship to evaluate how well I could handle customers. I went for it. Everything seemed fine at first. There were already other girls working there. Then I met the boss. At first glance, she seemed like a decent person, but as time went on, things turned into a nightmare. She always wanted everything done now. She would make comments to customers like, "Of course she's slow," or, "It makes me angry when she doesn't do what I ask." She always had something negative to say. She acted like everyone was trying to steal from her. If you were late even by a minute, she'd say it was 30 minutes. If you clocked in at 8:01, she'd treat it like 8:30. One day I was assigned to clean the tablecloths and rags used for cooking and cleaning. I took about 7 hours because I was folding everything properly and organizing the space. I stepped away from my regular area to do this. When I explained why it took so long, she ignored me, as usual. The next week, she told me I'd be better off working as cleaning staff in her house. That's when things got worse. If she was rude at the store, imagine how she'd act in her own home. I started helping her there too, trying to adjust. But then, guess what? My pay went down, and it was already terrible. I was getting paid $18 per hour, and they still wanted me to work 10-hour shifts. Everything went downhill. The pay was bad. Her comments were inappropriate. And whenever she scolded someone, she'd do it right in front of the store's customers, making it even more humiliating. Honestly, I'm fed up. Her energy is just toxic, and I feel like it's starting to rub off on me. I'm about to quit. I'm just waiting until the end of my shift so I can pick up my pay, and then I'm done. If anyone has any advice on how to give her a taste of her own medicine, legally and calmly, I'd appreciate it. She's always angry and miserable, and now I understand why no one sticks around. She has a terrible reputation.